Marie Bernard, host of Synchronicity, Friday mornings at 9. Join me as we explore topics like health and wellness, prosperity, inner peace, the law of attraction, and more. Tap into good vibrations to start your weekend feeling uplifted and optimistic. Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Fridays from 9 to 10 a.m. on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
Good morning. Welcome to Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul here on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, or you might also be listening online at CITR.ca, CosmicDimensions.com, EmpowerRadio.com, or on the Co-Creator Network. Thanks so much for being with me. I hope you had a wonderful and happy Canada Day. And in a few days, if you're listening on podcast, and you're down in the States, have a very happy Independence Day coming up on the 4th of July. So it's definitely summertime now and lots of stuff going on in the city. Today's guest is Roger Nygaard. He is the director of The Nature of Existence. And we are going to talk with him about just what is the nature of existence. Welcome to the show, Roger. Okay, then. I'm not exactly sure what just happened. Roger? Okay, he seems to have disappeared. Oh, there he is. Hi, Roger?
Yes.
Hi.
Hello.
There was a dial tone.
Yes, somehow I got cut off, but I'm here.
Oh, yay. Okay, so we were just going to talk about your movie, The Nature of Existence, which is actually opening tonight in Los Angeles, correct?
Yeah, two theaters in Los Angeles and one in a theater in Irvine as well.
Irvine, California, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Cool. So what are those theaters in case people want to go check it out?
Oh, well, yeah, if you're in the Los Angeles area, come on down. I'll be there. We'll be doing questions, Q&A after the evening screenings. But the Sunset 5 Theater in Hollywood, which is on Sunset Boulevard near Crescent Heights. And then in Irvine, it's the Edwards Cinema in Irvine.
Cool. And so in L.A. at the Sunset 5, what time does it start?
Well, it's five showings a day, so I'll be there for the, generally it's like, you know, 5-ish, 7:30 and 9:30 or 10, depending on, you know, they stagger them.
Okay, cool. Nice. Five showings a day. Pretty good. And the Irvine is the same deal?
Yeah, yeah.
Nice. Okay.
And I'll be there in Irvine on Saturday night to answer questions for the evening shows.
Perfect. Okay, so if you are listening to this interview and you have more questions, then you can catch Roger on 5 o'clock in LA if you're listening online, or on, sorry, at 5 o'clock? No, in the evening.
I'll be there at the end of the 5 o'clock show, which would actually end around 7.
Okay.
And to answer questions, and at the I'll be there for the at the end of both the 7:30 and the 9:30 shows.
Awesome. And then tomorrow night, Saturday night in
Same
Irvine.
Same thing in Irvine, right.
Okay, excellent. So let's talk about what is the nature of existence? I mean, what made you decide to travel all over the world interviewing people about the nature of existence?
Yeah, well, that's for one, it's an impossible topic. How do you make a documentary on one of the most esoteric concepts? You know, we know existentialism. You know, why are we here? What is the point of everything? And as long as we are here, what are we supposed to do about it? So partly for me, it was the challenge. I mean, if you tell me I can't do something, it kind of makes me want to try. But to look back at the origin for me, my first existential crisis happened when I was 7 years old, and I remember it very clearly. I remember one day, I was a voracious reader. I grew up in the country, so there wasn't much to do except blow things up and read books. So I tended to read a lot of books, and I was paging through the Family Medical Encyclopedia one day, just passing the time, and the first thing I looked at was tuberculosis. So I'm looking at the symptoms, and it says a lot of coughing, sleepiness, tired, you know, fatigued. And I'm thinking, man, I'm really tired. I sleep a lot. I was coughing. I'm going to die.
I think I have it today, too.
Exactly. So the little hypochondriac in me, you know, it was my first episode being a hypochondriac, I guess. And it was the first time realizing that this entity, myself, which I had assumed, I mean, you have no reason to believe otherwise that you're permanent. You know, especially as a child, life passes so slowly. You know, the day after Christmas, you can't imagine waiting a whole year for Christmas to come again. And so suddenly you realize the number of Christmases in your life is limited. It's kind of a shock to a conscious entity. So this little shocked seven-year-old, I put on my snowsuit because I lived in Minnesota and it was in the middle of winter, and I walked out onto the lake in front of our house and laid down and looked up at the stars and started counting stars and waited to die. And, you know, about 250 stars later, maybe 20 minutes or so, my feet were getting cold, and I thought, well, I better go in the house and have dinner. And, you know, I'm still here, so obviously, you know, it was a false alarm. And it unleashed questions in my mind. That was the first time, anyway, that these questions started coming to my perception about, you know, well, if we're here for a limited time, what should we do, and what does that mean, and et cetera. And it wasn't until I was 13 when my father passed away, he died from multiple sclerosis, that it brought that concept home and made it concrete. You know, it made it very near to me and personal. And when my father died, that raised another round of questions, maybe that had been kind of percolating underneath my awareness from age 7 to 13. When he died, he weighed about 70 pounds, 75 pounds, and he was a 6-foot, 180-pound man, reduced to an emaciated version of himself. You know, multiple sclerosis can be slow, and eventually he was unable to feed himself and take care of himself, and he died, you know, in a very slow, painful way. And so some of the questions that raised in my mind were, the obvious question was, when you die, where do you go? And what version of you goes there? Is it going to be, for my father, this 70-pound version, or some earlier version? And that opens up new questions, like, okay, so what happens when a retarded person dies? Are they retarded for all of eternity? Or a baby? Is it a baby forever? Or does it get an immediate college education? And who gets to choose his major? And, of course, you know, nobody had any definitive answers. The answer that you get is, well, we can't possibly understand all of what God intends, and so we have to have faith. But I yearned for more. And so the questions just sort of kept building. You know, you can't live your life focused on your mortality, so, you know, we kind of push it under the cerebral rug and try to live our day-to-day life and kind of ignore the fact that we're going to die someday. And then finally, you know, about 4 or 5 years ago, in 2001, when 9/11 happened, it forced the concept of mortality back to the forefront again for an entire country, you know, here in the United States anyway, where we could all imagine that happening to us, because there it was on television. We're watching people dying on television, and knew some people who knew some people, at the very least, who were there. And, you know, for about a week anyway, everybody was forced to contemplate their own mortality. And for me, that was kind of the final straw, this dam in my brain against thinking about my mortality had broken. And so I began questioning my friends, interrogating my friends, often without their permission. Well, you know, why are we here? What are we supposed to do about it? Where was God during the Holocaust? Is it a sin to masturbate? What about premarital sex? Why is God so interested in our sex life? What is this? What is sin? How does the soul work? Et cetera, et cetera. And as a filmmaker, I realized I could begin filming these conversations and make a film about this topic that I was really very obsessed with. And now I have a completed film.
Yay! Well, it was very good and very interesting. To hear all of those different viewpoints. I mean, you spoke with physicists, you spoke with a Christian minister who talked. Was that at your university where he stands out in the courtyard?
Oh, Brother Jed. Well, the first time I saw Brother Jed Smock was at the University of Minnesota where I went to school. And I remembered him 20-some years later, and I looked him up, and I found out he was still going at it. And so he spends all year long traveling the country, going to from one school to the next and preaching fire and brimstone to the students.
Yeah, he has quite interesting views. Very, very fire and brimstone. Everything is a sin, it sounds like.
Quite literal, in terms of what the Bible says. And so he will throw that out there. You're all going to, if you listen to rock and roll, you're going to hell. You beer drinkers, you're going to hell. And so he uses that to get attention. And then when people stop and they listen, then he will engage them in debate.
Interesting. Yeah, it was quite interesting to see some of the debates that were going on. His views on, I think, was it masturbation?
Mm-hmm.
It was quite interesting to hear what he had to say and some of the comments that the students shot back.
Well, one of his favorites, Brother Jed has a best hits, list of favorite hits. One is when people ask about masturbation. He says, well, masturbation is the next step, is one step towards being homosexual, because you're a man, you're having sex with yourself. That's basically being a homosexual, which gets,
And of course, he thinks if you're homosexual, you're going to hell, in his opinion.
Oh, of course. Yeah. And even though if you read the Bible, there are references to, it says a man shall not lay with another man. It doesn't say anything about women, actually. So women actually technically have an exemption. And so you'll actually find Orthodox Jewish lesbians that are, not afraid to be that because there is no prohibition against it, which is...
But in Judaism, there isn't a hell, is there?
Their hell, I think, is 9 months maximum. I believe it was 9 or 11 months, I forget which. And so, yes, some people have to go through this process for a while, but it's not for eternity.
So you can live it up, sin all you want, and the maximum sentence you're going to get is nine months.
Yeah, it's maybe not a very pleasant 9 months, but so they have a little different concept of it. Yeah, but Brother Jed's very traditional, you'd think you could trip him up, but he's been doing this for so long, it's pretty hard to catch him up. But there's a debate that happens in my movie between Brother Jed and an atheist named Steve Fromstein, who's a stand-up comedian and television writer. And it's fascinating to watch. They debate over several things about Jesus, about evolution. And all that Steve does is ask him questions, which is sort of the Socratic method. If you want to get at the truth, just ask questions. And you can actually see this if you want to see it. It's on our website. I put that excerpt from the movie. The website is thenatureofexistence.com. And it's quite an interesting debate to watch those two go at it.
Definitely. And, it's time to take a break. So let's do that, and we'll be back with more Synchronicity in just a moment. We are speaking with Roger Nygaard. He is the director of the new film, The Nature of Existence. It is a documentary where he travels all over the world and speaks with various people about their views on reality, the nature of existence, what we're here for, what's our purpose in life, and what happens after we die. So if you would like to check out his website, it is thenatureofexistence.com. The film is opening, if you're listening online, it's opening in LA at the Sunset 5 today, and in Irvine as well, Irvine, California. So thenatureofexistence.com. We'll be back with more Synchronicity in a few seconds.
Strength, dignity,
respect,
beauty, self-worth,
safety,
confidence, choice,
hope.
The Beauty Night Society is a registered charity dedicated to helping marginalized women introduce trust, hope, and self-esteem into their lives.
This is the first day of
Through its popular makeover program, the Beauty Night Society has touched the lives of thousands and reintroduced a healthy touch to the lives of vulnerable women throughout British Columbia, creating real life makeovers.
Please visit www.beautynight.org for information on programs and on how to help. Beauty Night, because dignity is beautiful.
I think I was blind before I met you.
Welcome back to Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, here on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. Thanks for tuning in. We are speaking with Roger Nygaard, the director of The Nature of Existence. Welcome back to the show, Roger.
Hi, good to be here. Yeah, I hope to answer all these questions in the next few minutes with you.
Definitely. First of all, you traveled. Let's talk about where you traveled to, because you were in, like, India and lots of different places.
Well, I tried to decide, how do you decide where to get the answers to the nature of existence? And so my strategy was to go to the places where the major belief systems in the world originated and talk to people there. So, of course, the United States, I travel around because I'm from here, and as I widened my circle, I started with my friends, which we all do when we have questions or problems or issues, we talk to our friends. So I did that first. Then I widened the circle and talked to people around the United States. I drove across the Bible Belt, spoke to Baptists and Methodists and scientists and pizza chefs and wrestlers and everyday people. Then I went international because I guess it may not be obvious, but it occurred to me all of our belief systems here in the United States, North America for that instance, are imported from elsewhere, except for maybe the Native Americans' approach, because they were here before we were, right, the Europeans. So I realized I needed to go to a few places. Specifically, I went to Italy to see if I could speak with the Pope. I went to England to go to Oxford and Cambridge to talk to scientists and Druids. I went to Stonehenge to talk to pagans. And I spent a month in China talking to Taoists and Confucianists, another month in India talking to Hindus and Jainists, Sikhs, Muslims, Buddhists, Baba lovers, and collected all of their responses. I had my list of questions, my toughest questions, and collected the world's, basically, it's a collection of the world's different belief systems and their responses to these questions.
And a couple of things that stood out for me was in the U.S., the wrestling ministry.
The Ultimate Christian Wrestlers in Athens, Georgia.
Can you tell us a little bit about, they acted out their wrestling Bible stories, right?
Yeah, it's one of those, I guess you might call it a jaw on the floor moment when you're watching the film, because you've probably never seen anything like it. And a friend of mine sent me a link one day when he knew I was making the film and said, hey, look at this website. You should interview these guys, ha, 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 thinking it was a big joke. And so I looked at their website, and I thought, yeah, these guys are fantastic. So I tracked them down, went to Athens, Georgia, or just outside of Athens. There's a little town called Winterville, which is their headquarters. And what they do is they have they're wrestlers. They're professional wrestlers who are also Christians who've decided to meld those two things together. There are two passions in life. It makes sense that if you're passionate about two things, you might have a desire to put them together in the same mixture. So wrestling is about good and evil. You've got the good wrestlers and the evil wrestlers. And these morality plays or these storylines play out in the wrestling world. Now, obviously, religion and Christianity and the Bible is about a battle of good versus evil. So they've got the good wrestlers who are kind of battling on the side of Jesus, and the bad wrestlers who have kind of gone over to the dark side. What they do is they have several battles, and the final battle happens. And the final battle between the two top wrestlers, the top evil guy and the top good guy, they will fight. And at the end of their battle, they're 3 or 4 rounds in the ring, the bad guy gets the better of the good guy and is about to hit him over the head with a metal folding chair when the lights go out. And after a few minutes, the lights come back on, and the good guy, who was on the floor, has now been replaced by Jesus Christ. And this passion play occurs. They act out a passion play. Mary is there, and the Romans, and they whip Jesus, and until the bad wrestler repents and asks for forgiveness. And they actually write a different passion play for every show, so you don't see the same thing every time. This is the one I saw. And it's to the people there, it's very effective and very moving. It seems like a bizarre combination, but I have to give them credit for their intuition and their success. You'll see, because people would come up after the show to join the church, and in front of everybody, express their new belief in Jesus.
It's pretty cool. I mean, it is funny. You're like, what are these jokers doing? But it's actually really, I mean, that's what wrestling is. They have the good guy and the bad guy. And I think it's a really brilliant idea, if that's what you want to, what you choose to believe in.
But we love that, you know, it's all our archetypes and our mythology. You can't have a story without a conflict between the good guy and the bad guy.
Exactly.
You know? So it kind of makes sense. That's what we love to see and hear in our storytelling.
And so I'm curious, though, do they actually play out real Bible stories, or do they just make up whatever they want?
I think they tend to mostly work from the Bible and then work that into their... They'll do a segue into some kind of Bible story from the wrestling show, but they'll tie the two together so that the people, you know, who are wrestling become characters in the Bible story.
Awesome. It's definitely worth seeing for that. Again, if you want to check that out, it's thenatureofexistence.com, or if you're in the Southern California area, tonight it's opening in LA at the Sunset 5 Theater, and then tomorrow you will be at the theater in Irvine.
Yeah, it opens tonight in both places, and I'll be answering questions tonight in Los Angeles and tomorrow in Irvine for all the evening shows. And if you want to see some of the clips from the Christian wrestlers, it's included in our trailer for the film, which is on our website at thenatureofexistence.com.
Yeah, it's an entertaining movie, and it's really interesting to hear all of the different viewpoints. I mean, there are some people who just say, there's no God. All you do, you just rot in the ground after you're dead, and that's it.
Yeah, like Richard Dawkins. I spoke to Richard Dawkins, who I guess you might say is the Pope of atheists, probably the most famous atheist on the planet, as well as all the various religious experts and people in between. I've actually gotten some criticism from people who say I should have only spoken to religious experts, but to me, it wasn't about promoting religion or indicting religion. It was just about, I wanted to search for truth wherever it may lead me. And so I don't know what qualifies someone to have a better angle on truth. And so I asked everybody. And so now the audience, you judge for yourself. Here are the answers I found. What do you think? And it really stimulates discussion after screenings. It's incredible. People, they just want to keep talking afterward. It stirs things up a little bit.
So if you want to get on the air and ask a question, the number to call is 604-822-2487. That's 604-UBC-CITR. Again, that number is 604-822-2487. So Roger, after interviewing all of these people and getting all of these viewpoints and spending quite a long time doing this, how long were you on the road doing this for?
It was a 4-year journey. I mean, I would take time off to work and save up some money so I could pay for all of this nonsense and then go on the road again and do some more interviews. But it was 4 years from first interview to a final cut.
And so at the end of the 4 years, what is your conclusion? What is your personal view on the nature of existence?
It's a very common... I get that question a lot, as you can imagine. What's the answer? Everybody wants the answer. And I have a kind of a complex reply to that, which... I have a complex way of saying the answer is very simple. I think that we all want or expect or would like there to be some kind of really big, complex answer up in the sky that explains everything. But to me, it seems like the answer is so simple. That's why it's so hard for us to see. And I learned a few things while talking to people, quite a few, but one of which is that the journey itself was the answer. Because once you arrive Once you get there, it's all over. And you have to leave the stage. And why would you want this wonderful journey that we're all on to end? And part of the answer as well is that people will say, we're looking for happiness. How do I find happiness? I need to find the right person who will make me happy, etc. But the problem is that, and I'll quote Julia Sweeney now, who I interviewed in the movie, she said, happiness is a byproduct of having a purpose. Happiness itself isn't a goal. It's an intangible. Ravi Shankar, Sri Sri Ravi Shankar, who is a guru in India that I interviewed, he defined happiness as discovering your true nature. I thought that was really brilliant and very simple, because once you discover who you are, you can begin living your life in concert with who you are. And I noticed for myself and a lot of people, if not most people I know, we live our lives for goals that are imposed upon us externally by our parents, our peer group, society, whomever. And it may not be in line with who we really are. I mean, one obvious example, just to make it, I think, very easy to grasp, is someone who is gay, who is trying not to live a gay lifestyle. They're trying to fit in because society, the majority of people are not gay. And so it makes it difficult when you're a minority. It's easier to be a part of the majority and fit in. But a person living that way is constantly frustrated. And as you could maybe notice by the plethora of Republican congressmen who keep turning up gay, but they're the most anti-gay crusaders, which is an interesting psychological thing, you know. But and you know, maybe they're trying to prevent everybody else from doing that thing that they themselves can't do. But if you're living your whole life in whatever it is that maybe you love to dance, but you're working a job that has nothing to do with dancing, or you love to write, or you love to paint, or you love math. Confucius once said that if you can pick a job that is something you love to do, you'll never work a day in your life. And that why would anybody, take retirement, for instance? The idea of retirement makes no sense to me. Why would you want to retire from life? I can understand wanting to not work at a job you hate. That makes complete sense. But if you find something to do with your life that you love doing, you should do it. And you would want to do it your entire life till the day you die, because since we're on this journey, the journey itself is about challenges and being challenged. Because if you're challenged, then you grow, and it's another way of saying learning. You know, the teachers love this part because ultimately it's about learning. Every day, you should continue learning and challenging yourself, and if you don't, once you stop learning. Once you retire, you begin dying. You begin leaving the stage. And people become very depressed when they're not offering something, when they're not creating. You know, the universe was created somehow, and we have been created somehow. And inherent in those two truisms is that we are here to create. So when you're not creating, you don't have a purpose. And so you're not very happy. When you are creating, you have a purpose, and happiness comes naturally. Now, you know, it doesn't mean, should you be creating a new painting every day, or a new dance, or a new math theorem? For some people, but most people, the default is to create another human being. And so then that takes up a couple of decades of your attention, and maybe your painting or your dancing, gets put on the side. But eventually, the kids leave the nest, and then people begin searching again. Now what am I supposed to do? And it comes back to creation, to be creating while you're here. Now, you can't really give anybody the answer. You know, when somebody says, what's the answer? You know, I can't tell you what your purpose is. You have to find it. And it's there. It's within you. And, you know, sorry for the long diatribe here, but the last point I'll make on the purpose issue is the biggest difference I found between Eastern and Western philosophy and religion is that in the West, we tend to pray outward to God and ask for things. Please help me, and please help grandma, or whatever. Whereas in the East, they tend to look inward. God is within you, and they meditate, and it's about self-realization. which, and breathing, the breath. You know, meditation is about focusing on your breathing, which stops you from thinking. When you're focused on, like yoga, when you're focused on holding a pose, you stop thinking, because if you don't concentrate, you'll fall over. And when we stop thinking, we get happy. And it's thinking that causes anxiety. Oh, I made a mistake last Thursday. Or I've got a project due next Thursday. And those things cause stress, because we are beings that can understand the concept of time, future, past. A lizard doesn't. A lizard lives in the moment. So we keep trying to get back to that lizard's bliss by stopping thinking for a little while, removing the stress, so the happiness that's within us can naturally come out. So there's my complex answer, to say that the answer is so simple. It's the simple things in life. It's the people in your life. It's the social connections. We're social beings. And if you have people in your life that challenge you, then you'll find you'll be a much happier person.
Wonderfully said. Well, it's time for another break, so we'll be back with more Synchronicity in a moment. We are speaking with Roger Nygaard. He is the director of the new film, The Nature of Existence. You can find the trailer for that at thenatureofexistence.com. Back with more in 30 seconds.
Rude boys, don't cry, don't cry.
Rude boy, don't cry.
Roses. Ska music, you make me dance all night.
Ska music, you're all right.
One, two.
I don't know, you're just in the trophy.
Scott T, Scenic Drive, every Friday morning, 10 a.m. till noon, CITR.
Welcome back to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I am your host, Marie. Thank you for being with us today. If you want more information about the show, and you can find podcasts and all of that, head over to my website, spiritualshow.com, and there's contact information there as well. If you want to email the show, spiritualshow@gmail.com is where you can contact me. And you can also follow me on Twitter. I am Marie Bernard there. And Roger, you're on Twitter, right?
Yes. My name, Roger Nygaard, as well as Existence Movie in two places.
Existence Movie. Wonderful. I'll have to find you. I think I'm following one of your names on Twitter, along with 45,000 other people. So, but so we were talking about the nature of being of existence, and what it means to be alive, and what's the purpose of being alive. And it sounds like creation is your answer for that. And what do you think happens after we die?
Yeah, you know, a good question, and it's something we're worried about. And it has to do with this fact that we have a temporal lobe in our brain, the frontal lobe, that allows us to understand the concept of time. A lizard has no lobe that allows it to understand time. And the majority of animals and creatures on this planet live in the moment. You know, you might find that dolphins or elephants have that idea. They understand that, you know, I'll be here next week, or I might not be here next week. And that raises that anxiety. Once you have the ability to understand time, what comes with it is anxiety, because that's when it starts to dawn on you that, you know, I might not be here someday. So that naturally brings up the question of, well, what happens on that day one after I'm not here anymore? And if we don't have an answer for it, the anxiety gets worse. It's something that we need to deal with. And part of evolving as an intelligent species allowed this part of our brain to develop as well. And so nature's answer to dealing with that is either remove that so that we don't have that worry. You know, alligators don't worry about time and what they'll do tomorrow. They just worry about, I'm cold, I'm warm, I'm hungry, I'm sleepy. And they just exist. They live in a state of being. However, we don't have that luxury. So nature had to design some way for us to deal with this. Nature could either remove that amount of intelligence And there's some evidence that intelligence is counterindicated for longevity of a species. You know, the alligators have been around a long time. They were here when they were dinosaurs. I mean, they've been around, you know, much longer than probably we will at this point. But, you know, we can hope for the best. So what happens after we're gone? That's a question we have because of the fact that we can think about the concept of time. And we need answers. And there are a couple of ways to approach it. One way is through religion, religious stories, religious ideas, spirituality, altered states, and science. All consider this question. Now, nobody's gone to the afterlife and come back with a videotape. So we can't really know for sure. All we know is what people have said, wished for, hoped for, testimony. And that doesn't prove or disprove there's an afterlife. And since there is no conclusive proof, unless you want to put your faith in what other people have told you, and my problem, or I should say, the problem that came up a lot in the movie is people don't necessarily distrust the idea of God, they distrust human beings who are relating what they said God said. It's much different if God appears to you than if he appears to someone else and they tell you what God said. And it's pretty hard to understand or explain to someone the idea of God if they themselves have not experienced it. I mean, it's try to explain the color green to someone who's born blind. It's just, it's not within their experience to have the same understanding that you do. So what happens when we die? Nobody really can prove one thing one way or the other. Does that mean there's nothing? No, it just means we can't be certain. If that's the case, though...
But what do you think, though?
Well, I think that means I need to value this moment right now and the number of moments I have left before my last day because they're so precious, because that may be all there is, but maybe there is more. We don't know. I don't know. Until I go there or until... You know, I am visited by someone, or somebody presents me with some kind of proof, there's no way I can be certain. But what I can be certain is that I have this time right now, and if I don't enjoy it, and if I'm not thankful for it, if I don't count my blessings, then I've really not utilized it or maximized the time that I do have left.
So, Roger, that brings up a question for me. So do you think that the belief in an afterlife takes away from people being more present and enjoying the moment that we have now because they're planning for this time after we're gone?
I think it's natural that if you are planning for a time later, you may be sacrificing opportunities now. They're related. They're certainly related. I don't think, though, that one has to be mutually exclusive of the other. It doesn't have to be that way.
Well, because, I mean, take, for example, like some people, if people are raised to believe that it's wrong to be whatever it is that you are, we'll use homosexuality as an example. Some people believe that it's a sin to be homosexual or to have sex with someone of the same sex. And so they could be living their whole life denying who they are because they are worried about what's going to happen after they die.
Yes, and they are listening to someone's testimony, telling them that. You can find someone who will tell you something different. And so the real question is, where is the truth? How do we determine truth? And which is another one of the questions in the movie that I ask people. Is there an objective truth out there? And if so, why do we all disagree so much? Another lesson I learned after talking to so many people in so many countries is that we are never all going to agree. Ever. It's not going to happen. So how do you find out who's right or wrong? Well, science has been pretty good. If you look, you know, over the hundreds and thousands of years, we've determined a lot of things that religion used to explain. You know, thunder, Zeus used to throw lightning bolts. Now we know it's electrons transferring from one polarity to another. Nobody will disagree with that. Science has won the day on that particular one. Now, there's a lot of things science can't answer, and we're still seeking answers in other ways. But if you're going to search for truth, what the scientists say is that we can never find truth. We can only get a little bit closer to it as we get more information. Many religions say we have the truth already. So which one is right? There's, of course, the theory that they all have pieces of truth, but that still implies that they're all partially wrong. So is it our perceptions? Is that the problem? Our interpretations? And how do you throw your confidence behind one particular religion when there are so many that are contradictory? Well, typically, we believe in whatever the prevailing belief system is where we're born. Belief is geographical. But as you become an adult and you become more aware of the world, you find there are other choices. So we shop around, which is what I did in this movie. I shopped around. I talked to Buddhists. I went to the source of Buddhism, Bodh Gaya in India. I talked to Hindus. I talked to Jainists. I didn't know what a Jainist was. I never heard of Jainists until I started this search, but it turns out Jainism is the oldest living religion on the planet. And so if your litmus test is for which one's right, is which one is the longest lived, it would be Jainism. Or if your litmus test is which has the most people or which one feels right to you, these are different ways of evaluating it, but how do we know which one's right? So we're never all going to agree. That's the bottom line. But because that's the case, our only real hope for as a species on this planet is that we tolerate other people's belief systems. And it's hard to do, but it can be done, and I found myself becoming much more tolerant as I learned about people. I may not have agreed with them, like Brother Jed, for instance. There are many things he says I disagree with. But as I got to know him as a person, I began to understand why he believes what he believes. And I was no longer fearful of him or of the Hindus or the Jainists or the Muslims that I met. I made friends everywhere I went. And I don't think religion is the problem. I think that proselytization is partially the problem. If you're trying to force your path onto other people, Confucius once said that the first version of the Golden Rule, which is his version, is called the Silver Rule. You should not do to others what you would not want done to yourself. It's kind of the negative version of Jesus's Golden Rule, do unto others. And it's a much more live and let live, hands-off approach. Julia Sweeney rewrote the Golden Rule when I interviewed her to say that her version that she preferred was do unto others as you would have them do unto you, but ask them if it's okay first. And to me, that's a better way of living for our species in order for us to get along with each other. And I would recommend anyone listening here, you could do what I did. You can go into any temple or church, synagogue, university, and ask to see the boss and ask him or her your questions. That's all I did. I just went and said, hey, I'd like to talk to the head Jainist. And he came out, and we spent 2 hours talking. That's what they exist to do. They're waiting for you to come in and ask them your question.
Except that didn't happen with the Pope, though, did it?
The Pope's a lot harder to see, yeah. Well, celebrities, they've got a wall of people between you and them. It's a lot harder to get to them.
And it's interesting, sorry to interrupt you about that, but when you use the word celebrity with the Pope, I mean, I guess he is a celebrity, but I don't know, that kind of makes me sad to think of the Pope as a celebrity.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can get to a Catholic priest or a bishop or a cardinal much easier, and I spoke to several of each of those. The Pope himself, being the head person of this hierarchy, is everyone in the world knows of him, and he's got a lot of demands for his attention, so that's pretty much the definition of celebrity. The Dalai Lama similarly is a celebrity. In order to get to see a celebrity, it helps if you're a celebrity, or you know somebody, or you're connected, or you're rich. You kind of need one of those things, or two.
Well, I guess the Pope's a pretty busy guy, so. But you don't have to go all the way, like you're saying. You don't have to go to the source, to the Pope or to the Dalai Lama. You can ask other people.
Yeah. I mean, we're social beings, and that's what we do. We talk. You know, I've heard it said, you know, that language was invented for gossip. Human beings utilize most of our language to talk about other people and what they're doing. Pay attention, you know, to the percentage of the time you spend each day and how much of it is gathering information about other people or disseminating information about people. No wonder reality shows are so popular. We are a social species. We exist to interact with others in our species. That's our primary purpose and where we gain the most pleasure in life.
Definitely. Well, it's time to take a break again, so we will be back with more Synchronicity soon enough. We are speaking with Roger Nygaard. He is the director of the film The Nature of Existence. You can see the trailer online at thenatureofexistence.com. And if you're listening online and you're in the Southern California area, it's going to be playing in Los Angeles at the Sunset 5 and also in Irvine, California, opening today. So we will be back with more Synchronicity in a few moments.
The Sled Island Music and Arts Festival between June 30th and July 3rd, coming to you from Calgary, Alberta. This year's festival promises to be another success with over 200 bands, films, comedy, and art shows. With an independent film festival between June 24th and the 29th, there's sure to be something for everyone.
The music shows will take place at different venues across the city, with the main site located at the Olympic Plaza between July 2nd and 3rd. That's the Sled Island Music and Arts Festival in Calgary, Alberta, between June 30th and July 3rd. Buy your tickets, and for more info, visit www.sledisland.com.
Going to have a party here tonight, son?
I mean, whatever happens, your toes are still tapping.
The Biltmore Cabaret at 395 Kingsway is Vancouver's hottest live showroom devoted to independent music of all genres.
We like Biltmore, yeah, like Biltmore.
Check out BiltmoreCabaret.com for upcoming show info and DJ nights.
And if you're a rock star, you're famous, and you rock out.
Are you sure this is legal?
I don't know. It's fun, though, isn't it?
Welcome back to Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul here on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. You might also be listening online at CITR.ca, CosmicDimensions.com, EmpowerRadio.com, or on the Co-Creator Network. I am your host, Marie Bernard. Thank you for being with us. We are speaking with Roger Nygaard. He is the director of the film The Nature of Existence. Welcome back to the show, Roger.
Hi, yes, we're having fun, huh? This
yeah, we are. So where were we? We were talking about celebrity and the Pope. And
we've covered a bit of ground here, yeah, we're doing good.
And you mentioned reality shows. Now, a reality show at the Vatican, that would be quite interesting.
You know, there's a moment in the film where a woman stands up in a seminar that's hosted by a guru named Aha, and she asks him, "What is my purpose? I don't even know where to start." And Aha says to her, "I hate to be the one to break it to you, but the purpose in your life is that person to your left. And your purpose is also that person to your right. What you mean when you say purpose is recognition." And I thought that was a really insightful comment, because I think, you know, in modern society now, we tend to mistake fame for purpose. If I can just get famous, you know, more people will know me and like me. And it's tied into the social aspect. We're social beings, and it's very important what our peer groups think. But fame is a very empty goal. It doesn't give you the satisfaction of spending time with grandma or, you know, your three-year-old or, you know, your best friends. That's where it's a much more satisfying meal. It's more like health food. Reality shows are definitely junk food for that reason. And the people who seek fame ultimately end up being very disappointed once they receive it. It doesn't give you the satisfaction that you think it's going to give you. You know, boy, I sure like hanging out with my friends. if I had a million friends, I'd be a million times happier. Well, it kind of works in the opposite direction. It makes you less happy, ultimately.
It does. Well, fame takes away some of your freedom because everyone's up in your business. And
yeah.
The
you
more
can't
famous
trust people
yeah.
anymore.
Exactly.
You know, do they, you know, like you for you? That's the age-old question, you know. Does she love me for who I am? You know, does he love me for what's inside? Well, human beings are a little bit shallow, to be honest. We definitely take surface things as important. And it takes a while to get past that. And once you get to know somebody, that's like having the healthy meal, spending time with someone, which is what I did when I traveled the world. And I would sit down with a Hindu or a Muslim in India and ask them 2 or 3 hours worth of the hardest questions I could think of, such as, you know, what is our purpose? What is spirituality? Why are there so many religions on this planet? What does fear have to do with it? What's the difference between religion and science? What is God? Define God. What does that word mean? You know, what is faith? And what is truth? What is morality? What is sin? You know, do we truly have free will? Why do we suffer? And et cetera. And people, when you spend that amount of time discussing these big issues with people, then you tend to bond with them in a way that is not surface. It's on a very deep level. So I've got friends now all over the world that I've really bonded with in just by virtue of going and listening. Because people want to be heard. When you find an unhappy person, you generally find someone who feels like they're not being heard. No one's listening, which means no one cares. Listening to someone means you care. And so I didn't realize this necessarily while I was doing this, but I was traveling the world showing people that I cared about them because I wanted to hear what they had to say. I wasn't there to debate them or try to change them to my belief. I wanted to understand why they believed what they believe, which I guess is kind of anthropological in a scientific sense, but it also comes from the heart because of that bond that happens between two people. And it's an exhilarating experience. If you ever traveled, gone somewhere, and then just happen to meet someone by chance and get into a deep conversation, it's exhilarating. And sometimes you have to travel to break out of your usual routine where we tend to live our lives very closed. Out of defense. It's a natural defense because it's dangerous to let people in. But sometimes you get shaken out of that when you're traveling and you meet new people, and it's one reason why vacations can be so much fun.
Wonderful. Well, it sounds like you really, I mean, I love your film. It was really interesting to watch, and it made me question a lot of things that, you know, we kind of take for granted sometimes. And it sounds like it really had an impact on you personally.
Oh, every interview. Yeah, definitely. It certainly changed me greatly.
And we just have a couple minutes left in the show. So, Roger, I'm wondering if there's anything that you would like to leave us with. What do you think needs to be said that hasn't been?
Well, you know, another of the most popular questions I get at screenings is, do you believe in God? And when someone asks me that, the way I have found myself responding is, well, first of all, I ask them a question. I say, I can't even answer that question until you answer a question for me. Define God for me. Because unless I know which version of God you're talking about, how can I even answer that question, whether I believe your version or not? And, you know, as Gandhi said, there's as many religions on the planet as there are people. And I think there are probably as many definitions of what the word God means. So most people hadn't thought of that, and they didn't have an answer. Sometimes they would say, well, the God of the Bible or the God Ganesha, you know, or whichever religion. You know, the Confucianists don't believe in a God per se. They believe in ancestors, though. So they talk to ancestors. And when they go to their temple, like the Confucius Temple, which is their Vatican, they're honoring their ancestors and offering prayers to them and asking for guidance and help. So people have different perceptions. So how does Roger look for God? Here's my answer after thinking about it and traveling and talking to the string theorists, the particle physicists. To me, if we're going to look for God, one good place is to look at the very fabric of existence itself, because it came from somewhere. And the particle physicists are trying to determine now where the very most minute particles that make up everything, which they call strings, these vibrating wavelengths of energy, they can determine where strings and the various particles come from, then we'll know where we came from. We'll know where the universe came from. And we'll have a better idea of what caused creation. So if you look at this fabric of existence, take an atom, for instance. An atom is 99.999999% empty space. You know, an atom is a nucleus orbited by electrons. And if you increase the size of an atom so that the nucleus was an apple in your hand, about that size, the electrons would be orbiting about a kilometer away. So you can see how it's mostly empty space. And we are made of atoms, and so you and I are mostly nothing. We're 99.99999% nothing. Yet still we exist, and we're conscious. And part of this being conscious is to yearn for a purpose that's greater than ourselves, greater than simply reproducing our genes. You know, the evolutionists will tell us that we exist to reproduce our genes. They'll reduce it to that level. But we yearn for more. And it's in that space, I think, between the mostly nothing that we consist of and our self-aware existence that we look for more, that's that intangible something. And for lack of a better definition, we might call it a soul or a spirit or a life force or maybe just this consciousness. And is there one religion or philosophy that best represents that intangibility? Well, that's still up to the individual, and it's up to discussion. You know, maybe, maybe not. I do like the Hindus' approach. You know, one approach I like is the fact that the Hindus say that if you're already in sorrow, a sorrowful condition now, you're already in hell. And if you're in a joyful condition, you're already in heaven. It's part of their belief that God is within you, the devil is within you. It's all within you right now, which, you know, I think would tie into the laws of attraction, you know, and self-empowerment. It's everything you need is within you right now. All the answers you need are within you. It may not be that easy to find them, and it helps to have some clues. And my documentary, The Nature of Existence, is filled with clues. I think it has all the clues you need. It had all the clues I needed. And because you can't give someone the answer, any good teacher will tell you it's better for a student to arrive at the conclusion themselves. You give them help. You give them information. You give them clues. Well, that's what this movie does. It gives you all the clues you need, I think, to arrive at an answer. And it may not happen instantaneously. I've talked to people where it's percolated in their brain for 2 days. I get the call 2 days later. They still want to talk. And then 2 weeks later, and they still want to talk about some of these things. So if at the very least it stimulates people to think, that to me is my purpose. I've helped to give people the tools they need to think a little more.
Wonderful. Well, with that said, we are out of time. So thank you so much for being with us today. Roger Nygaard, he is the director of the film The Nature of Existence. You can find him online at thenatureofexistence.com. And tonight in Los Angeles, he'll be speaking at the Sunset 5 Theater, if you're listening online. And also tomorrow night in Irvine, California as well. Good luck with your opening.
Thank you. Yeah, it opens tonight, and also it's going to open in another 15 or 20 markets across the United States and Canada over the summer, and then it'll be on home video, of course, November 9th, and we're releasing a companion set that'll go with the film. If you like the film, we're going to give you the opportunity. If you want to really go much deeper, you'll have that option, too.
Awesome. Well, at least check out the trailer at thenatureofexistence.com, and hopefully you'll get to see the whole film, because it definitely is worth watching. Thank you so much, Roger, for being with us.
You're very welcome, and I look forward to all your answers, and you can submit your answers on our website. You can answer all these questions, and we're collecting people's responses, and it's just fascinating.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. Take care.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Right, bye-bye. So that, again, was Roger Nygaard. You can find him at thenatureofexistence.com. That's all the time we have today for Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. Next week, Surya is going to be on. She will be speaking about her new album, which is a fundraising album for... I think it's Tibet or somewhere. She'll talk about it next week. We'll find out all about that and we'll be listening to her lovely music. I'm going to close the show with a song by Surya. And up next is Scotty's Scenic Drive. So thank you so much. Happy summer. And if you're in the States, have a happy Independence Day long weekend. Take care. Be well. Namaste.
Gracious Lord, Master, Messiah, and Savior of humanity, we greet thee with all humility. Thou art the first cause and the last effect, the divine light and the spirit of guidance, the Alpha and the Omega. Thy light is in all forms, thy love in all beings, in a loving mother, in a kind father, in an innocent child, in a helpful friend, and in an inspiring teacher. Allow us to recognize thee in all thy holy names and forms, as Rama, as Krishna, as Shiva, as Buddha. Let us know thee as Abraham, as Solomon, as Zarathustra, as Moses, as Jesus, as Muhammad, and in many other names and forms, known and unknown to the world. Adore thy past, thy presence deeply enlightens our being, and we look for thy blessing in the future. O Messenger, Christ, Nabi, the Rasul of God, thou whose heart constantly reacheth upward, thou comest on earth with a message as a dove from above. When Dharma decayeth, and speaketh the word that is put in thy mouth, as the light filleth the crescent moon. Let the star of the divine light shining in thy heart be reflected in the hearts of thy devotees. Message of God reach far and wide, illuminating and making the whole of humanity as one single family in the parenthood of God. Amen.